Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 1160 of the Juice Box Podcast. Today, I'll be speaking with Beth, who is the mother of three children. Her 12-year-old son, who has a twin, has type 1 diabetes and was diagnosed at 9 years old. Beth is a professor of biology, and she used to be a neuroscientist. I think we're going to talk about neurons and brains and stuff. Nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan. Don't forget to save 40% off of your entire order at CozyEarth.com. All you have to do is use the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout. That's JUICEBOX at checkout to save 40% at CozyEarth.com. If you have type 1 diabetes or are the caregiver of someone with type 1 and a U.S. resident, the T1D Exchange is looking for you. T1DExchange.org/juicebox. Take you 10 minutes to fill out their survey. It's all they want. They have simple questions about type 1 diabetes, and your answers can help to further type 1 diabetes research. T1DExchange.org/juicebox. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by US Med, usmed.com/juicebox, or call 888-721-1514. US Med is where my daughter gets her diabetes supplies from, and you could too. Use the link or number to get your free benefit check and get started today with US Med. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by AG1. drinkag1.com/juicebox. Head there now to learn more about AG1. It's vegan-friendly, gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, no sugar added, no artificial sweeteners, and when you make your first order with my link, you're going to get AG1 and a welcome kit that includes a shaker, scoop, and canister. You're also going to get 5 free travel packs and a year's supply of vitamin D with that first order at drinkag1.com/juicebox. This show is sponsored today by the glucagon that my daughter carries, Gvoke HypoPen. Find out more at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox.
My name is Beth. I am a mother of three and a college professor. And my oldest child has type 1 diabetes diagnosed in October 2020.
How old is your child now?
He's 12. He was 9 when he was diagnosed, just going into the 4th grade.
Okay. Son or daughter, can we say?
Son. He has a twin sister. So I have 2 daughters and a son.
Okay. Oh, he's a twin.
He's a twin. That's right.
Identical or the other one?
No, fraternal. It's boy-girl, so not identical.
You know, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Sorry. Hold on a second.
I do get that question a lot.
I'd understand. I'd understand if everybody shut this off now. Hey, honey, I'm listening to a podcast. The guy just asked. Oh, boy. Okay, hold on. I'm sorry. I'll do better.
No, it's fine. It's fine. You don't think about it right away that they're boy, girl, and that, you know, it just doesn't.
There was a light in my eye, and I just shut it off. I'm going to blame that and keep moving. Oh, my gosh. So are they identical? No, I just said one of them's a girl and one of them's a boy. They don't look exactly like. Oh, okay. Do they look oddly alike?
No. All of my kids look very different from each other. And I think that's because my husband is from India and my background is, you know, more Irish, Scottish. So blonde hair, blue eyes. So we have an interesting mix of traits in our children.
I just want you to know that when you said my husband's from and you paused, my husband, I thought you were going to say, isn't all their fathers or something? Like, I didn't know where you were going at first. I was like, how could this make a difference? But anyway, all right. So he is all their fathers. That's nice.
He is all their fathers. Yeah. We're very sure on the first two because we went through some years of infertility. So the twins were the result of in vitro fertilization. Gotcha. So we're absolutely positive.
Gotcha. And if I'm not... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
No, please.
Oh, I was going to say my son is like a carbon copy of my husband, but with lighter skin. So
interesting. So all of your husband's features more.
All of. Yes. Right. It looks he looks it. And people have a lot of trouble understanding what race he is. I don't think I'm going to say his name on the podcast. It's sure. a very distinctive name. We did give them traditional Sanskrit Indian names. Mm-hmm. So people are confused, especially if I'm with them and their names and, yeah. you know, and my they husband's not around.
Yeah, they think
my youngest daughter has blonde hair, blue eyes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, they definitely think you stole those kids. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
there are people making phone calls like, I'm seeing human trafficking at the Macy's right now. I know for sure. yeah. You got to come now. There's a white lady stealing some oddly caramel Indian children. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, you know what? They're not caramel. They're white.
Oh, wait a minute.
They're so white.
Oh, no kidding. I'm not going to know the names. Although my daughter's friend says them around me all the time and I don't pick them up right. But is your husband darker or lighter?
He's lighter. He's from, I guess his mom is from Delhi and his dad is from Gujarat, which is a city in northern India. So his sister has hazel eyes. So he does have a lighter skin, but he's clearly Indian, you know.
So we're going to get off this now, but your son looks like I took a picture of an Indian person, put it in Photoshop and move the contrast all the way the wrong direction.
Yeah. He does have the darkest skin of the three kids, but his skin is lighter
interesting.
Than what you would expect for an Indian child.
Look at you making new drinks. Good for you. that's wonderful. Okay. Now I'm going to test myself because I prepared for this a tiny bit. What do you do for a living? If you take insulin or sulfonylureas, you are at risk for your blood sugar going too low. You need a safety net when it matters most. Be ready with Gvoke HypoPen. My daughter carries Gvoke HypoPen everywhere she goes because it's a ready-to-use rescue pen for treating very low blood sugar in people with diabetes ages 2 and above that I trust. Low blood sugar emergencies can happen unexpectedly, and they demand quick action. Luckily, Gvoke HypoPen can be administered in 2 simple steps, even by yourself in certain situations. Show those around you where you store Gvoke HypoPen and how to use it. They need to know how to use Gvoke HypoPen before an emergency situation happens. Learn more about why Gvoke HypoPen is in Arden's Diabetes Toolkit at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. Gvoke shouldn't be used if you have a tumor in the gland on the top of your kidneys called a pheochromocytoma, or if you have a tumor in your pancreas called an insulinoma. Visit gvokeglucagon.com/risk for safety information.
I'm a college professor. I actually teach at a community college. I was a scientist for many years. And then once the twins were born, my husband and I both quit our jobs and moved to Ohio to be closer to family. So
nice. But what did you do when you were in an industry?
When I was doing research?
Yeah, I'm trying to get at what your educational background is, I guess.
Oh, so I have a doctorate in neuroscience. Mm-hmm. So I spent many years studying the neural circuitry of motivation and addiction. And it's so strange because I actually was trained in an obesity research center. And everyone around me was working on a cure for obesity and also diabetes.
I got it right in my hand now, Beth. I have to take it after we record.
I know. Well, the funny thing is, are you talking about Wegovy?
I'm holding Wegovy right now, yes.
Yeah. So there was a grad student when I was in grad school. She was working with a GLP-1 agonist. And I still remember, like, she was investigating its effects in anxiety. We work with rodent models. And I remember the rats were, like, jumping off this plus maze, which is insane behavior for rats.
Okay.
So I can't remember if she was using something that activated or blocked that receptor. So it was either something like Wegovy or the opposite. But anyway, the rats were jumping off the maze, which meant that this was an incredible anxiety reducer in these animals.
Beth, I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off, but I wasn't following at first. So you took their anxiety away so much they were like, I could jump off of this.
Yes.
Oh.
Exactly.
But a rat is not.
I mean, I could explain how plus maze works, but I don't think people would be interested in that.
I'll decide what people are going
to
be interested in.
They like to stay in dark places. They do not typically jump off of elevated mazes.
Wow. But if you give them the right thing, they're like, I can do anything. I'm Superman. I'll
launch myself off this maze.
You didn't even have to let them watch like a video game. They still thought they could do it. That's excellent. Well, I'll say this. I'm holding my, I'm at a therapeutic dose now. So I'm using 2.4 milligrams weekly. I'm going to actually inject it. I do a little diary about it. So I'm going to record with you. Then I'm going to open my diary up and inject this and record the diary. But I'll tell you, I'm down 31 pounds. I started in March. All of my measurables are going in the right direction, with the exception of muscle mass, which I expected because I'm losing weight. And so I'm beginning to add like exercise in to try to move that in the other direction as well. But it's fascinating. Like, I don't believe that I'm eating that much differently now than I was before I started taking it.
So can I ask you something? Cause I'm actually really curious about this, just based on what I used to work on the motivational circuits, and I was sort of like the expert in food motivation.
Before you ask your question. Let me just tell people, little tease. I don't know if you ever heard tickle your ass with a feather, but I'm going to ask Beth a lot of questions about having low blood sugar and your brain later. So everybody, hang on for that. So good.
I'm excited to talk about that.
I am too. But first, ask your
and
question.
High blood sugar, right?
Oh, we'll
high
do
blood
them sugar both. Why not? Yeah, we're here. Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead. Tell me your question.
So my question is, do you feel not hungry? So when you take Wegovy, do you lack that sort? Are you not getting as much reward from the food that you eat, I guess?
Yeah. So it's a bit of a process, like, because you start on a very low dose, they titrate you up, etc. The hunger piece hit me immediately. So you don't feel physically hungry. I didn't feel physically hungry almost ever, meaning like in your stomach, like a grumble or an emptiness in your stomach, that kind of thing. Never felt that. Also in your head, not hungry. Right. Like your brain is not saying, hey, we should eat. In the first couple of days, I had to set timers to eat, like alarms.
Wow.
Because I was getting to like 3-4 in the afternoon. I'm like, I'm dizzy. Like, why am I dizzy? Yeah. And then I thought, oh, I have not eaten anything today. So
it's so amazing, because those were the things that I was working on and my colleagues were working on when I was in graduate school and during my postdoc. And, you know, you get to a point where you tried so many things and you think none of this is ever going to work unless we're able to inject it directly into the brain. A lot of things just don't work because they can't get past the blood-brain barrier. But it seems like they found something. And I'm wondering if it actually is going to be useful for other addictions, too.
What I'm seeing. Papers popping up about, is this going to help you with other addictions? Is it going to also the idea that maybe people have GLP deficiencies?
Maybe. You know?
And that's the one thing that I start leaning towards, because it's been a week since I took this injection. I've lost like 2.5 pounds this week. Okay. In this week, I have eaten crab legs and fries at a bar. Now, it was like a pound of crab legs and, you know, I had a couple of french fries, but I did that. Arden had a moment one night at like 10:30 where she goes, we should go get cookies. And we drove like across town to this like all night cookie place and bought crappy cookies and ate them at like 11 o'clock. Yesterday, I had a big sandwich, like a 8-inch turkey roast beef provolone sandwich and a handful of Doritos. Okay. And I lost 2.5 pounds this week. So
it's so strange. It must be affecting, you know, something on the metabolism side as well.
It's fantastic.
So I don't know enough about it. Yeah. I was just curious about the motivation aspect.
I'm holding this in my hand and I'm telling you, unless this gives me some sort of debilitating disease or it rots my brain from the inside out, I'm going to take this for the rest of my life.
Everything that I've seen come out, and I'm very skeptical when things first come out like this, everything that I've seen has been positive.
My brother's taken Ozempic. My brother has type 2 diabetes. We're not related by blood, but he said that his resting blood sugars and his spikes are so much lower on Ozempic than anything else that he's tried. He's never tried insulin, but anything else that he tried. And He's lost like, I think he's lost like 40 pounds or something like that.
Wow. That's amazing.
It's insane. Like I started in March. It's September. I weigh 31 pounds less. And wow. I don't think I'm done, by the way. I think this stuff easily gets me to 180 at some point. And I started, at 234.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, that's great. I'm so happy for you. That is, yeah. And anybody that's having those kind of results, just think about, you know, how that's going to look for your health in the future.
Yeah,
I was just thinking about my husband's pre-diabetic, but he's thin. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, would a drug like that even work for him? He forgets to eat on a regular day. He just doesn't, he's like missing that part of his brain that tells him it's time to eat. Yeah. So
I don't know that it's for everybody, obviously, but I can just tell you through my life, diabetes comes with a lot of things to remember. So it's nice when someone takes something off of your plate. US Med has done that for us. When it's time for Arden's supplies to be refreshed, we get an email. Rolls up and in your inbox says, "Hi Arden, this is your friendly reorder email from US Med." You open up the email, it's a big button that says, "Click here to reorder," and you're done. Finally, somebody taking away a responsibility instead of adding one. US Med has done that for us. An email arrives, we click on a link, and the next thing you know, your products are at the front door. That simple. usmed.com/juicebox or call 888-721-1514. I never have to wonder if Arden has enough supplies. I click on one link, I open up a box, I put the stuff in the drawer, and we're done. US Med carries everything from insulin pumps and diabetes testing supplies to the latest CGMs like the Libre 3 and the Dexcom G7. They accept Medicare nationwide, over 800 private insurers, and all you have to do to get started is call 888-721-1514 or go to my link, usmed.com/juicebox. Using that number or my link helps to support the production of the Juice Box podcast. Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. That's why for the last 3 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day, no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel energized and focused. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. Before I was taking AG1, I would get that brain fog in the middle of the day, and I just couldn't seem to get on top of it. But now, that doesn't happen anymore. By starting my day with AG1, I found focus and a renewed ability to perform at my highest level all day long. drinkag1.com/juicebox. When you use that link, you're supporting the production of the Juice Box podcast. I drink AG1 in the morning, but you could use it as a coffee replacement, before a workout, or in your smoothie. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why I've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/juicebox. That's drinkag1.com/juicebox. Check it out. The joke I've told it on here, and I've said it through my personal life forever and ever, I retain water like a pregnant lady. Like if I go out and if I would have eaten a sandwich and chips yesterday, not on Wegovy, I would have woken up 2 pounds heavier. And I bloated, but not excessively eating anything. I don't know, my body never seemed to work correctly, is the best. Right. Like my digestive system's better, like everything's better. And wow. So I don't know what to tell you other than I'm in my renaissance right now. I feel like I'm going to live till I'm like 95. There was just some preliminary talk the other day about it reducing heart disease.
Right.
I
saw something about cancer too.
Oh my God.
I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up.
I may never die, Beth. That's all. Yeah. I'm just saying this. Maybe I could live forever and be thin like a model. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty, you know.
Great, all around.
Yeah, yeah. I would have like the sunken cheekbones, and they'll have to rouge me up so I look alive. No, I'm just kidding. But I'll tell you the thing I've learned more than anything is that Arden's. She showed me a video. She goes, "Oh my God, look at this! Remember when this happened? This just popped up on my timeline." And she showed me this video of me just, I don't know, I was doing something stupid in the kitchen, and she's holding it up, and I'm trying to listen to the words But all I can think is, oh my God, look how fat I am in that video.
Oh no.
I was like, oh my God, is that what I looked like last year? And then like, I was like, it was a little like defeating because you learn to be accepting. It's like that slow drip water torture. Like you,
it sneaks up on you, I think. And our bodies are, you know, as far as homeostasis of body weight goes, we're kind of made to gain about a pound a year, which one of the guys I worked for used to say, it's a potato chip a day. That's how much we're off. Like one single potato chip a day, 13 calories, I think, is towards the positive side.
Right.
And that ends up being a pound a year. And, you know, it's just, that's the way we evolved.
Yeah.
And so
all I can tell you is that I'm all for this now for intervention. I'm trying other things that I'm not even ready to talk about on the podcast yet. And I am fully expecting that in 6 months, when I go back to the doctor to talk about how this is going, I'm going to ask them for testosterone to build my muscles.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The one worrying finding is the muscle mass. And that, I think for you, it's probably fine. But for people who are older, I mean, mm-hmm. having enough muscle mass is really important in aging.
Yeah.
To prevent, you know, bones breaking. And
I'm just telling you, Wegovy has taught me I can't beat Mother Nature, so I'm going to help it. So
that's awesome.
I'm getting out of this. Damn it, I'm gonna look good for one moment in my life. You guys will know when I'm happy. I will take a photo of myself every 16 minutes and like tell all my family and friends, like, please just keep these for my funeral.
Well, you know, we don't see, like, I mean, I see pictures of you, but I don't see you on a regular basis. So right. I probably wouldn't even know that you'd lost weight if I saw you.
That's
so.
The other really disappointing part of it is that, I should say this. It's lovely, okay? But my kids don't see that I've lost weight. Like I saw my son after I lost like the first 15 pounds and I'm standing there like it's Christmas morning waiting for somebody to hand me my gift. And my gift is going to be, oh my gosh, look, you've lost 15 pounds. He did not notice that I looked any different.
Oh, well, you're expecting way too much there.
Yeah, I know. And so
I could dye my hair purple and no one would notice. Well, I swear. But
I mentioned it to him and he said, yeah, I don't think of you as a fat person.
Aww,
and I was that's nice. Yeah. So, and by the way, I didn't think of myself that way either until I lost 30 pounds. And now I look in the mirror and go, oh, what were you doing? Like,
it's not your fault though. I mean, again, it's just the way that the, you know, your genetics and.
Yeah. I usually preface all this by saying like, if you, I got a picture of in your head of me, like, eating like a bag of chips every day and, you know, like handfuls of, I don't know what, it's just not who I am. My body just held on to weight like crazy. Yeah. So,
yeah. I mean, if you look at you're adopted though, right? I was going to say, if you look at your parents, you can pretty much tell what you're going to look like their age.
I was purchased at a bargain bin situation. So they tell me I was adopted, but maybe I was human trafficked. I mean, look at your story from earlier where you stole those white Indian children. So, okay. So Beth, tell me, let's just dive into it. Let's not talk about your son or diabetes or anything like that. I think, possess knowledge we need to get to because one of the most often asked questions that I don't know how to answer is how low is too low and what's it doing to my brain?
So The reality is that the research on this topic is not excellent because you can't do the studies that need to be done. You can't take people, you know, and make their blood sugar low and then see what it does to them.
Well,
over
not
time.
In this country at this time, let's just say. Right.
So, you know, and when you read I've read a lot of papers because obviously, you know, after my son was diagnosed, I dove into the research and what I came away with is that being severely hypoglycemic, like having a seizure, you know, below, you know, 54, like an urgent low, that's not good for the brain. Like the brain needs to have a constant supply of sugar, of glucose. Neurons, that's the only thing that they can use for fuel. And when they don't have enough, they're going to start undergoing like cell death. And once you lose neurons, you know, except for a few places in the brain, you're not going to make any more. So it's not good to have severe hypoglycemia, especially repeated.
And so what does severe mean?
That's a good question. Yes, so, it doesn't say in most of the papers, they don't define it well. I think typically they're talking about severe enough where the person needed help in some way. Mm-hmm. Either they had a seizure or they were, you know.
So we're not talking about a blood sugar of 65.
No. And, you know, you can't say that for sure because right. There has not been a study where they've looked at long-term outcomes of people that, you know, mm-hmm. allow their blood sugar to go into the 60s. But I will tell you what I think is just as bad as having those severe hypoglycemias. I think that blood sugar variability, so the ups and the downs, I think is actually more dangerous, especially for type 1s. I think one thing that people do that is actually very harmful is to leave their, especially this is from a parent perspective, but it could be, you know, a type 1, you know, to keep their blood sugar high because it feels safe. Because what that does is it causes the brain to adjust the way that it takes in glucose. So if you are bathing your brain in high blood sugar, the brain is like, whoa, that's too much. And then it reduces the number of transporters so that it's kind of trying to keep out the excess sugar, which is harmful to the neurons, to the brain cells. And so it down-regulates the number of transporters. And then what happens when that person, that individual inevitably will have a hypoglycemia because, you know, oftentimes when you are keeping your blood sugar high, you eventually, you know, are yo-yoing. And then the hypoglycemia is, I think, more dangerous because you don't have enough glucose transporters because the brain's gotten used to the high blood sugar. Oh. And then, you know, you often hear people say, well, I feel low at 100. And you're like, oh, well, that's not a real low, but it is for them because their brain is not getting enough blood sugar
right. Because
they don't have enough glucose transporters because they've been existing at this higher level for so long. And it is dangerous. Mm-hmm. And I've read a lot of things where the highs followed by the lows are, you know, the repeated highs followed by the lows are really, really bad because the brain just
yes. So the bouncing is dangerous because your brain is like, all right, you're going to keep your blood sugar high. I'll adjust, and then zoom, it's low all of a sudden.
And it can't change that fast. Like it right. does have an ability. Your cells have an ability to like change how they interact with these things. So it can change the amount of glucose it's taking in across the blood-brain barrier, but it can't, you know, the blood sugar, if it falls really fast, it can't adjust fast enough. And then you basically are starving your brain cells of sugar. And so some people say, oh, well, I don't want to, you know, keep my child at a normal blood sugar range because then they don't feel their lows. And they're talking about they don't feel the 60s and the 70s. But, you know, if you look at a normal person's blood sugar, sometimes you're in the 60s or 70s.
Yeah. See, there was a man named Rick that came on once. Have you ever heard Rick Lives on a Boat?
Oh, yeah. I did listen to that one.
And Rick says something to me hundreds and hundreds of episodes ago that has never left me. He said, you know, if you test people's blood sugar who don't have type 1 diabetes, sometimes their blood sugar's in the 60s for more than an hour a day. Mm-hmm. And I went, wait, really? And he goes, yeah. And I thought, I'm going to believe Rick. He sounds smart. I didn't do any research past that.
There is some research on that. There's, I forget the name of the article, but the first author was Shaw. And he looked at CGMs in non-diabetic healthy individuals. And his argument in his paper was that we should change the, you know, what we call low, because it was normal for people who don't have diabetes, who have, you know, normal glucose metabolism to be in the 60s a couple times a day. And after I read that paper, I, you know, put on a Dexcom myself, one of the, you know, transmitters that was going out. Mm-hmm. I put it on. I'm like, let me see about this. I was in the 60s frequently, not low 60s, but I was oftentimes in the high 60s. And I would double check it with a finger stick. And
you felt fine.
So I just, you know, to me, that 60, 68, that's not a low blood sugar to me.
The way I think about it, I say it a lot, but Arden's blood sugar, she's sleeping right now because she's leaving in 2 days for school. So I think she's taking up the rest of what she calls her puddle time, which is she comes home and melts into a sleeping puddle and we take care of her again. And she goes, I revert to a princess for 3 months during the summer. So she's sleeping right now. Her blood sugar is 85. In any focus that I can tell you, that's my goal. Right about 80, 85. That's what I'm shooting for. I think of 120 as action time if it's rising. I begin to think of high as 130. A 150 to a 180 blood sugar constitutes a pretty big miss for me as far as like a meal or a spike, right? And then on the low side, I don't care if she sits in the 70s all night long. A stable 70 is fine for me. A falling 70, I'd be concerned about, right?
Exactly.
You know, and if she were to, I mean, she's using an algorithm. If she was in the 70s and it was to dip into like 65 and the algorithm took away insulin and brought her back up, I wouldn't think twice about that. Quite honestly, like low is in my heart, low is when she's altered.
Right.
But if you ask me what number do you not want your daughter under, I would say 70. Like, I know, so that seems conflicting, but I don't think it is. Like, if she bounces down to 65 and comes back up, I'm fine. If we get a falling low and we catch it and she dips into the 50s for a second and comes back up but never feels it, I think, okay, well, good job, we caught it.
Right. Giving
an example, last night, Arden and I recorded a podcast together. It's our third podcast we've ever recorded together.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that one.
Well, you're not going to hear some of it. I'll tell you why. And so we recorded for like 90 minutes and we had been out that day and she had had, here's how the day got mucked up. She spent the night at someone's house unexpectedly. While she was sleeping in the morning, her pod ran out of insulin.
Oh no.
And I was asleep and she was asleep and we both kind of woke up at the same time and I was like, hey, her blood sugar has been rising for like 2 hours. So I texted her, I'm like, where are you? And she's like, I know, I'm on my way home. And I was like, okay. So like, be clear. She was riding in the 80s for like 12 hours. We just started a new algorithm. It's working really well. And I was like, I was actually like, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to get like a 24-hour graph where she's like not over 110 and not under 70. I was like, this thing's crazy. Then I wake up and I flip my phone open and she's 250. And I'm like, wait,
oh, no.
That doesn't make any sense.
What happened?
And I'm looking, I'm like, why is the thing not bolusing? And then I'm like, oh, because the thing doesn't have access to any insulin anymore. So I'm trying to wake her up. She's like, I know, I'm on my way. So anyway, it was kind of bad. She didn't have insulin for 2 hours and her blood sugar got up to 320 before we could fix it and bring it back down. Did it pretty quickly. I mean, she got the new pod on. I think we pushed 9 units through it. And by the way, we just went with what the algorithm said. I was like, let's see what happens. It got her down fast, but it couldn't catch it. So we had to catch it with a little carbs. It was no problem. But then we had to eat. So we went into that like low drop, can't really bolus, here's food, spike again, 200, gets it back down. And now it's 8-9 hours after this all started. And we're sitting in maybe 12 hours after this all started. And we're sitting in here recording a podcast. And she's, we start, her blood sugar's like 110. It's still kind of drifting back down. It's all good. And we're talking for like an hour, hour and 15 minutes. And we're getting ready to wrap up. And neither of us are looking at our phones. Our phones are muted because we're making a podcast. And I ask her one more question. And as she starts answering, I'm like, why is she being so mean?
Oh,
like,
no.
And unkind. And like, and I, none of it hit me. I have to be honest with you. I was like, is she trying to be funny and missing the mark because she's 19? You know what I mean? We're talking and she's like, you know, and she's being like, now she's starting with a kernel of truth. Like a thing she believes, but as she's defending it or explaining it, she's being cruel. And I was like, I'm actually thinking no one's going to hear this. I'm cutting this out for sure. Like to protect her. But then she goes, hey, we got to stop. And I'm like, what? She goes, I'm low. And she's like, I don't feel good. And I was like, okay. So we went downstairs and we got her some food and all this stuff. But it was one of those lows that stuck with her for a while. Like it didn't come right back up again. Okay.
Yeah.
And then we started talking once she was okay. But as soon as it came back up, her knee started to hurt. Her ankle started to hurt. Like she got all achy all over. We had to stretch her out and everything. And I was like, I think this is from the high, low thing today. Is that?
I mean, That makes complete sense to me. There's no research that you could point to or study that is going to definitively tell you that. But to me, the ups and downs, I think, make you feel like crap. Mm-hmm. And I, like, just from a, you know, looking at my son, because we have bad days like that too. I think everybody does. When that happens, he doesn't feel good, and he's not himself.
Yeah.
You know, and it high or low, you can tell from his, because he's such a sweet kid, just so kind and funny and just such a great person. And if his blood sugar is high, he's mean. It's like, if it's above 200, he's a different person.
Right.
And if he's low, he gets silly, and then, you know, he can be mean then too. Mm-hmm. I think it depends on the situation, but.
It's fascinating. Cause as she's sitting there going, like, I'm not okay. Like, I said, oh, I just hit stop. She goes, that was an abrupt way to stop the podcast. I'm like, I don't care about the fucking podcast. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
you know,
let's deal with this.
Yeah. And so I get up and, like, I turn the ceiling fan on to, like, hopefully, like, to help her as we're moving out of the room. And then it feels good. And she just sits there. And I thought, oh, wow, she would sit here and die if I didn't just tell her to move. Like, right. I'm like, Arden, we have to go downstairs. She goes, but the fan feels good. I'm like, Arden, you need to go eat something. Like, let's go. And she wasn't like, I don't know if she was going to get through a seizure. I don't think it was. Honestly, it wasn't that kind of drop. But it got lower than she should have been. And it hit her
hard.
Yeah,
you got to wonder if the brain hadn't, you know, sort of. I don't know how long it would take for the brain to acclimate to high blood sugar. I was thinking more of someone who sat in the 200s all the time.
Sure.
But you never know. I mean, maybe you're in the 200s for a few hours and it changes your brain chemistry a bit. And then you're more, you know, you're more susceptible to those lows at higher blood sugars.
No idea. All I can tell you, Beth, is that she was like, Arden's not a cruel person. Like I asked like a question that I thought was going to make her introspective. And instead, she just took the side of the argument that she agreed with. And then everyone else was an idiot. And I was like, this is not her. Like, this is not how she talks. It's not how she thinks. It's not how she breaks ideas down. And it just took me a minute, like, to go, like, what's happening? But I was also trying to, like, interview her. So I wasn't thinking of her as a person with diabetes. I was, you know what I mean? I was like, where's this going? Like, you know, that kind of thing. It was very interesting. Anyway, I'm sorry. So there are high blood sugars. There are low blood sugars and there is stability. And those are kind of the focuses, the way I think of it, at least. So let's ask you, for a person who's read all these things and has a deeper understanding of them, what's a blood sugar you're trying to keep your son under?
Well, that, you know, I would love it if I could keep my son in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I think that's where he sort of is at his best, maybe, you know, below 110. He's on Tandem's Control IQ. So that's not really.
It's more of a 112 and a half target, right?
Yeah. I mean, we keep him in sleep mode, and that sort of is a little bit more aggressive. His settings are aggressive. That works well for us. I wouldn't recommend that for everyone, but his average blood sugar is typically somewhere between 105 and 110. So, you know, we do pretty good. When he's with me and I am bolusing for him and, you know, doing the bumping and nudging kind of in the background, he's in range 100% of the time. And he basically is gliding along, you know, kind of like an airplane with very little spikes. Yeah. But when he's away from me, it gets more difficult. And I don't think I mentioned this, but he is, he does have dyslexia. And he has been diagnosed with ADHD, but he's a different kind of type of kid. He's he has a very high IQ, and they call these kids. And this sounds terrible, like I'm bragging or something, but it's not bragging at all because it's actually very challenging. They label these kids as twice exceptional because
is that the new phrase? The that they called me in school.
What?
Academically talented. You know what I wasn't? I was not academically talented.
You may have been twice exceptional too. You don't.
Beth, let's just say I was not academically talented, but I was twice exceptional. I'm going to write that down. That's what they should have called me. By the way, also, you shouldn't tell a 5-year-old they're smarter than other people. That's not a good idea either.
No, it's never a good idea. Mm-hmm. It's the whole the whole way they do gifted programming, and at least in the public schools around where I am, is just a complete nightmare. But yeah. I won't get into that.
Well, let's get into it for half a second. The lady that was talking to me was a big dummy compared to me. She didn't know how to talk. I'm just kidding. She didn't know how to talk about these things. But no, it was, I mean, I'm old. So it was in the 70s. Uh-huh. And they were like, yeah, you're academically talented. We're going to put you in an AT class. And I was like, uh-huh. Okay. And the way that it was explained to me when I was five, word for word, is, Scott, this man thinks you're smarter than the other kids. Uh-huh. I'm a parent. That's not a thing you tell people. So,
right. Yeah. That's not a way to get the best out of.
if that's a thing you think, you keep that to yourself. But anyway, so now they're saying twice exceptional. What's that put his IQ at? Well, so
twice exceptional is for children who, like, when they give, in our school, they give a test to figure mm-hmm. out whether someone's gifted or not, which is sort of like an IQ test. And all three of my children, qualify as quote unquote gifted. I'm not sure how we can tell someone's gifted in elementary school, but they're not profoundly gifted. Like they're not Mozart or, doing calculus or anything like that.
Playing a piano with their butt while they're doing calculus with their toes. Yeah.
They're not like that, but they have, relatively high IQs. But then my son wasn't learning to read. It was the strangest thing. And, he had a twin sister, so she's reading like chapter books. She's reading Harry Potter in the second grade, and he's not able to read like the easy readers. Right. So I'm going up to the school and I'm like, he can't read, like something's wrong. And they're like, oh no, his test scores are great. He's fine. Yeah. And it was very strange. So, it took 3 years to get him on what we call an IEP for his dyslexia, and we had to get like outside evaluations, and that's when we learned about his twice exceptionality, which what it looks like on an IQ test is that he has really high highs and really low lows. Mm. So his fluid reasoning is like genius level, but his processing speed is below average.
That's funny. So, I can't do anything that you would think of as academic. Uh-huh. So, but I guarantee you when the monsters come, I'm going to be alive and you're all going to be dead, because I can pivot on a pinhead.
So my son could build a car engine like today. Mm-hmm. Like if I gave him all the pieces of a car engine and said, build this, I have no doubt in my mind that he could build it.
Yeah.
But he still can't read very well. And that's just who he is. He's a smart guy, but it did pose a bit of a challenge when he goes to a special school now for kids that have his type of, he's dyslexic, so he needed extra help with reading. So it's a private school. And when he actually started there, and then the month after is when he was diagnosed with diabetes. So right. It was kind of a weird timing.
I will tell you that I think the only thing I'm good at is thinking.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So when I sit and talk about like big ideas, I can hold on to all of the extraneous impactors, and I can see how they hit each other.
Yeah.
So if I talk to somebody who's too black and white and I start explaining an idea, they get focused on an aspect of it. And mm-hmm. I'm like, no, you don't get it. I was like, there's this thing over here that's impacting this other thing. And then 3 years ago, this happened, and that's why this is happening over here now.
Yeah. So you were academically talented because that's what, like, you're able to think outside the box and bring ideas together. Yeah.
I can't do algebra. I don't understand science. So everything they were measuring me on, I was like, I don't know what this is. But again, like, I can think things through really quickly and maintain a vision of other people's perspectives or other impactors. Mm-hmm. I never really say this out loud. It's why I'm good at managing the Facebook group.
Oh yeah. You're really good at that. Yeah. I would be dreadful. I don't know how you do that. And I just, kudos to you for your ability to cut. Like, some of the times you come on there and I'm like, wow, that was so well said. And
it's because I see everybody's perspective and I understand their perspective. I don't agree with them, but I understand them. And uh-huh. I operate on the fundamental idea that everyone's right and everyone's wrong and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's great. Mm-hmm. It works really well. I get on there sometimes and I'm like, oh, that's not right, from like a scientific perspective. And I'm like, let me share this journal article with you. And it's really not the right approach on Facebook.
No, you know, there's a lot of different ideas in the room and you just have to try to keep focused on the goal. What's the goal? You know, the goal is that a person needs to leave here with more information than they came with. They need to be comfortable and live a healthier, happier, more productive life from something they took from here. The goal is not for you to tell them how you feel about the thing they asked.
Yeah. I mean, I have to tell you, that group, I wasn't a big Facebook person before diabetes. I would post like pictures of, you know, family stuff for my family, but I wasn't in groups. Like I didn't have a group thing. And I found the Facebook group must have been a couple months after he was diagnosed. And I joined a bunch of the diabetes groups. Like I joined all of them that I could find, especially the ones that I thought were geared towards parents. And I was in those groups for about 2 weeks. And this was like right when he was diagnosed and I was in a really bad place, as you know, as you are. And I left all those other groups. I couldn't stand them. I was like, these people are crazy. and all the graphs that they were posting were just giving me like, I don't know. I just felt like everybody was in such a bad place and it was so depressing. And the Juice Box group was the only one where I felt like people were actually giving real advice that was useful. And I don't know. I found it very helpful.
So prior to that, all you used Facebook for was to put up photos so that your husband's family would say there are 700 million Indian ladies here and he found an Irish girl. Great. Is that what happened? If you're just torturing them?
I mean, honestly, Facebook's really big in India, and I have all these family members that I don't know who friend me. And I only, they have my husband's last name, and they look like my husband. And I'm like, well, that must be a family
they
member of mine.
They must be somebody I know. Except, actually, the podcast is exploding a little in India.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it grows grows there constantly. It's very, very cool.
That's great.
Anyway, so, all right. You and I are chatty in a good way. It's fun, by the way, because usually I cringe a little. Somebody's coming on and they have like a real scientific understanding of something. I'm like, oh, they're not going to be conversational, but you're very conversational. So that's terrific. You're going to end up back on this podcast if you keep doing such a good job, Beth.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But I don't know. This was hard for me to do, to be honest.
Really? Why?
Yeah, it really was, because I'm not in, like, I'm not an active bench scientist right now. And I, you know, I've read a lot of papers, but I'm not like an expert on.
Who's an expert on it? Who would be an expert on it?
On type 1 diabetes?
This time. No, like, so my point is you have this educational background and you're motivated by your son's diagnosis and you went and read a lot of stuff. I want to hear what you think. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, if we go to some person who did research, like, they're not going to know to say something like, hey, listen, 65, like, you know, it's okay.
Right.
You
I mean, like, I think there is something to be said for when you do have that personal connection to the disease, when you're reading the papers, it's much more engaging. I will say, like, I've read, you know, thousands of articles. This is a funny story. When my son was diagnosed, he went to a major university. We're in a city that is known for hospitals, and so he has very good care providers. But I had already pulled up the Lancet article on teplizumab while he was being diagnosed, and I'm like, we need this. I'm like, where can I get an infusion of this for my son? And then, you know, they're like, how do you know about that? And I'm like, we need a Dexcom right now. And, you know, so I don't know.
No, good
for you.
You
get treated differently.
You get treated differently because they think you know something?
Yes. And my husband's a physician. So he, you know, we just get treated a lot differently. I think it's not fair.
Right.
But we do.
By the way, I stopped myself from saying, of course he is, because he had no choice. That's what his family told him he was going to be, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know what he does as a hobby? He's basically he should have been an engineer, which is, I mean, that would have been the second choice of career, but he makes medical devices as a hobby and he has some patents and he's actually he's a very smart guy.
Sounds like it.
he made this. So I am the one that takes care of the diabetes. I am like the full-time diabetes manager in our house. And so when our son, you know, has a compression low at night, I'm the one that gets up. And we have a bedroom on the ground floor, and we have a rather large house. And I have to walk up a flight of stairs, down two hallways, into his bedroom, climb up into this loft bed, which I wish we'd never got him, but he has a loft bed, get hit by a ceiling fan, all of this just to roll him over because he doesn't wake up. And so I was, you know, very tired. And I'm like, there has got to be some way we can get this kid to roll over. And so my husband created a, we call it the buzzer, but he created this device that my son wears on his pants, and it buzzes and tells him to roll over. And I think it's a great like invention.
Really?
And he has it patented. I'm like, what? He's like, well, I need to do clinical trials and this and that. And I'm like, well, I feel like this doesn't need a clinical trial. I think we should just sell it. Yeah. And we actually live pretty close to the guy that does the sugar pixel.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I'm like, let me just figure out who that guy is. And you need to talk to that guy about, you know, getting this thing out there.
I can give you his email address if you want.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, I could probably
figure it out.
He's on the Facebook page sometime. I've seen him.
He is, yeah.
Post, but my husband is so, he's just, he makes all these things, but he doesn't, you know, they never go anywhere because he's just, he doesn't have that entrepreneur side.
One of my brothers-in-law, he one day, he builds things with his hands. And I'm always like, this is amazing. Like, what are you doing? Like, why do you work where you work? Like, get a job with Nerf or something, you know?
Right.
And I don't know. He's like, check this out. And it's a gun that shoots like a potato and it does like all this stuff. And you're like, I'm like, you made that? And then I'm like, I don't understand, where'd you get the wood? He goes, I took an old cutting board and and I'm like, wait, you made this out of a cutting board? I'm like, I don't understand. You know, and but if you said to him, you should go do that for a living or sell it, he'd be like, nah.
Yeah, that's exactly my husband. I told him this was when we first, when I was first dealing with trying to help our son manage while I was like lecturing and things. I'm like, it would be great if I could just see the numbers on a screen or something. And he mm-hmm. built me a whole screen. All it is like a wooden box and it projects Night Scout. I mean, we kind of probably could have used, you know, anything else, but it's so nice. And he built it for me. And
oh,
he's very talented in that way.
I could tell. I mean, you married him and let him give you babies and everything. So you must have liked him.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, no kidding. That's really cool. I just know a number of Indians. And the idea of like, my mom told me I'm going to be a doctor. Or nowadays, it's cybersecurity, coding, like knowing how to like do Python and stuff like that. Like that kind of stuff is very popular with kids. My daughter.
Yeah. I mean, my husband has two sisters. One is a dentist and the other is an ophthalmologist. So they're just,
and damn it, they're doing it whether they want to or not. And that's that.
Yeah. So. That's what it was.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Okay. So I'm sorry. We did not get back to my question. Again, I like you. So you're shooting for a 90 blood sugar. People are like, remember when you asked her about the blood sugar? Can you get to that?
Right.
You're shooting for 90. The algorithm keeps them more in like the 110. So what's his A1C? Around 6.1, 6.2 normally?
It's 5. I think the last two times it's been 5.5.
5.5. So how are you doing that?
Well, so we keep his settings. So his total daily insulin, I know what that is because I can look at the history of the pump about what he's getting every day. Mm-hmm. And I will set his, what he's getting, and then I'll look at 50% of that and I will set his basal higher so that, you know, instead of setting the basal to what he should be getting, I'm setting it a bit higher. Mm-hmm. And then that tends to make the algorithm, that works for me. I don't want anybody else to take away the idea that
nothing
might work for them.
You hear on the Juice Box podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. So go ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah. But tell me what you do. You're not telling people what to do. If you, by the way, if any of you are listening and like, I'll just do it because Beth said so, whatever, do whatever you want, but it's not Beth's fault and it's not mine if it doesn't work out. So you're being more aggressive with his basal.
Yeah, so his basal's pretty aggressive. The correction factor's not as big a deal for us because we don't use the mode that he gets auto corrections, but that is set more aggressive at times when I know he's going to have these rises like early in the morning. Mm-hmm. In general, it's a very, I have his settings very simple. They're just, you know, one or two basal rates a day, one or two correction factors. But the key for us was really look at what he should be getting, you know, basal wise, which is around 10 units, 12 units, and increase that by about 20% in the settings. And then because we know the pump's going to suspend sometimes.
Right.
The other thing that I do is I, a lot of times, am pretty aggressive with boluses. I would rather overshoot it and him need like I just texted him this morning. He had a donut for breakfast and his blood sugar went from, he woke up in the 100s and he went down to 70 for the pre-bolus. And then he went up to 130. He had a glazed donut from the bakery. And I had probably over-bolused a little bit because we were running a little late, and he just had to eat two gummy bears to stay in range.
Boy, Beth, so. That sounds pretty close to me. Good job. That's really good.
So two gummy bears. I feel like if you're off by two gummy bears, you know, some people are like, oh, they went low. And I'm like, well, two gummy bears is not.
Yeah.
You know.
Also, we should definitely call this episode Off by Two Gummy Bears. I'm writing that down. That's excellent. No, I think that sounds terrific. A glazed donut, not over 130, and you only had to correct with what, six carbs?
Yeah. So that's pretty good, right? Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and that every morning doesn't look like that, but that's, you know.
Beth, you calling that pretty good is the humblest brag since you told me all three of your kids are really smart. So that's pretty, it's better than pretty good. That's amazing. It's really terrific. Yeah. But you're saying when he's on his own, he can't quite accomplish that.
Yeah, it's, and the reason is that he relies on me right now. But mainly because when he's at school, I want him to be focusing on learning and not on managing his blood sugar.
Right.
So he doesn't pre-bolus his lunch, which is, you know, that can cause problems. Because he goes to this different type of school where the school is designed for kids with ADHD and dyslexia, they tend to be much more active. Like they might take the kids out for like an unexpected recess or, mm-hmm. you know, when they're learning to read, they might be doing something like jumping around in the classroom. And so I never know what his activity level is going to be.
Right.
So because of that, because I don't, you know, if he's at home, I know he's going to be outside playing basketball. I'll turn his pump down a little, but can't do that. You know, when I don't really know what's going on
sure.
while he's at school. So
that's excellent. I mean, Beth, this is terrific. Like you're doing so well. Do you know that? Or is it a thing where you're like, oh, we're struggling? How does it feel to you?
No, I feel like we're doing really well. And I didn't feel like that in the first year. It was a real struggle. So anybody that's listening to this that's newer, I just want you to know that it is like this is achievable. But I feel like it takes a lot of trial and error, especially with bolusing. So it took me a long time to figure out how to bolus for that donut. The timing, like looking at the waking blood sugar and seeing where it is and looking and seeing how much basal the pump was giving him. And
yeah.
It's like a calculus problem, you know, trying to figure out all these different variables. And then I just don't go based on the carb ratio anymore. I take into account all those things. And then I put in the number of carbs that give me the amount of insulin that I know will work at the right time.
You learned that from the podcast or did you figure it out? You
did. Absolutely.
Okay.
I think that is the key to the podcast is for me at least, was giving me the confidence to go in and do what I knew I should have done anyway, because this is all like, as a scientist, this is what we do. Like trial and error is how we work in science. It's like, oh, that didn't work. Let's change this and try it again. And, you know, so once I started looking at it like that and being more flexible, it got much easier.
Good. Well, that's excellent. I just think again, like I want to like circle back. You're in a unique situation. So I really do just want your opinion. So you're shooting, you'd be happy if he was 90 all the time. You don't like him over 130. Is that about fair? 120, 130?
And I'm actually good. I'm good under 150, I think.
And what do you,
at school? Yeah.
And what do you call low?
65 is what his settings are. But I don't generally, the goal for me is to not let him get to 65. Sure. So
no, I understand.
Yeah, like the gummy bears that I gave him were when his blood sugar was 85, but I could see that he was going to be heading down. So,
but you call 60 in your mind. See, I'm worried about, not worried about, I'm trying to illustrate how you think about it. So you think of 65 as low. Where are you comfortable with him? How low are you comfortable with him stable? Like if he was 70 all day, would you say a word?
Oh, that would be great. Okay. I'm fine with a 70 stable. I mean, that's where my blood sugar was when I had a Dexcom on.
Yeah.
So I think that's great.
Excellent.
You know, that's where a non-diabetic person would be. So to me, there's really no reason to not be happy about a normal blood sugar.
Right. What's a number that makes you go, oh, hell, we messed up?
Oh, you mean like a high?
A low. Start with a low first. You see the number and you go, ooh, that's not okay.
Oh, anytime I see that he's in the 60s with like a diagonal down arrow, mm-hmm. like I can see that I'm not going to be able to catch it, you know, like I missed it or something. And yeah. And I can see he's going to be heading into the 50s. That makes me feel really bad. So
what low number makes you think about all the research you read and go, oh, I hope I'm not frying his little brain?
Anything below 50. And that doesn't happen very often for him. But that's when anytime I start to notice that he is different. And to me, when the behavior becomes different, that is when the brain has been impacted.
Yep.
So, you know, that's to me, you know, some people are going to have those symptoms at a higher number. And I would argue that's because their brain has become tolerant to higher blood sugars. Mm-hmm. So it's and it could just be physiological differences, too. But for my son, you know, anything below like the low 50s or below that is really not good. So
if I'm wrong, you stop me. But do you think that the phrase feels they're low has been kind of co-opted by something that people don't understand? Does that make sense to you, what I just said? Maybe not.
Sort of. I don't know what you mean by co-opted, but I think people use it incorrectly.
Okay.
So I feel like, because sometimes I'll say, oh, I like my son to have, you know, normal blood sugar. And then someone will be like, oh, it's bad because they can't feel their lows. And I'm like, but he can feel his lows. It's just his lows are different than, you know.
Yeah. So the scale's weird in their head, right? So they're keeping higher blood sugars so that at 70, they feel a low because they think if we catch a low at 70, then we can stop it from like being a real like medical emergency. And,
right.
And so that idea puts into their head that 70 is low.
Yeah. And they also, people get so stuck on the numbers when what they really should be paying attention to is the arrows, because, you know, the number, like, who knows exactly what that, you have your Dexcom stuck on your thigh or what, you know, it's measuring interstitial fluid, which is the fluid between the cells, in, you know, the subcutaneous fat on your thigh. Mm-hmm. What does that, you know, mean to the glucose in your brain? That has always been like a question for me. And even the, you know, the blood that is coming out of the capillaries in your fingers, like how is that relevant to the blood sugar that's going into your brain? So it's
just the best measurement we have.
Exactly.
Right.
It's, you know, it's a correlative. The arrows are really the most important thing. So 70 horizontal arrow, I think that's awesome. I would not touch that with anything. But 70 with a down arrow, that is a major concern for mm-hmm. me. So the arrows are so important. And I think especially newly diagnosed people, they get so focused on the exact value instead of thinking about the trends and the graphs and the arrows. And
yeah. Am I rising?
Stability.
Am I falling? Yeah. How do I feel?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
You almost wish that. Again, it's people who think very black and white, and I understand that, but it's the idea of like, oh, there's the number. 68 is a great example. 68 is low. We're in a panic right now. 68. If you could, like you said, somehow put a sensor in your brain, how do you know the level of glucose in the brain's not 72? And oddly enough, that would make you more comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, the levels in the brain are very highly it's your brain is probably the last thing to go, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. The body is going to make sure that your brain has sugar
as best it can. Yeah. It's
just keep so helping. Like if you're this is again, I don't have any data to back this up, but I think if the, you know, fat cells are, you know, at 68, your brain's probably a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. But that would just be my guess.
And Beth, let's just be clear. You work in a community college. We don't believe you at all. So don't worry about it. I'm just kidding.
Hey, the community college.
I'm joking.
Well, let me tell you this, though, because there's a lot of stigma around community college. You know, I quit my job, which I was on the tenure track. I had a research lab and, you know, I was in a state school in Maryland. And mm-hmm. I was doing really well. And then when the twins were born, my husband and I both quit our jobs and moved to Ohio. And I don't regret that because So I stayed home with my kids for 3 years, and then I took this job at a community college, and I make more money now, like twice as much money as what I made before, and I work less. I don't have to work on Fridays if I don't want to. I have tenure.
Yeah.
They can't fire me. And I love my job because I am the people that I interact with are absolutely amazing. I teach biology and anatomy and physiology. So I have a lot of pre-med, pre-nursing, and it's just, it's a very rewarding job. And I have to say, everyone that I work with, they all have PhDs. They all left industry or, you know, research in some way. So,
well, Beth, I want to be clear. I barely got out of high school and I did not go to college at all. I'm not besmirching anybody. I took one community college English / writing class when I was like 23, maybe. I got a great grade in the class, like an A plus in the class. I got done. I was like, there. And my wife's like, see, you could go to college. And I was like, all this tells me is I don't need to go to college.
Yeah. I mean, and not everybody needs to go to college. Yeah. A lot of the people in my classes are like, you know, switching careers or, you know, just.
It's just a different way of thinking. Like I grew up very broke. So I never thought. Like college was never presented to me by anybody. Like what was presented to me was you make it through these 12 years and then go get a job. And and that's how life was presented to me. Then I met Kelly, who'd gone to college and, you know, had aspirations about things. And she's like, you know, you're very smart. You could just do this too. And I was like, I don't think I need to. And in her mind, she's like, no, you absolutely have to. Everybody has to go to college. Like that was her perspective. And mine was, I think I'll be all right. And
look how well you've done.
Well, I have a podcast, but I taking that class and doing well in it, like where it to her, it was like, see, you could do this. You should go do it. I thought, oh, see, I can do this. I don't need to do this. Like it was a really interesting moment, like where I think she was disappointed actually. And I was like, no, I this just tells me I'm okay. I'm where I thought I was. And that's interesting.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. You may or may not believe this, but we have very similar backgrounds as far as that goes.
Why would I not believe that, Beth?
Huh?
Why would I not believe that?
I don't know. I mean, people think, oh, she has a PhD. She must have, you know.
Oh, okay. I thought I thought you were lying to me, but no.
No. I mean, I grew up, like, I don't think I was poor. Well, I take that back. I mean, I grew up in Kentucky and, you know, neither of my parents went to college and I was not expected to go to college. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were people in my family that had addiction issues and that's kind of what led me on the path that I went on.
Oh, to learn, to look into the brain and addiction, how that works.
I was going to fix people. I was ready to find a treatment. And I didn't, but, you know, I learned a lot of things along the way. So
were you looking to help them or were you also worried that if this happens to me, maybe I can stop this from happening to me?
Oh, no, I was going to fix them.
Oh, okay.
that was my main goal.
Yeah. Are they alive now or no?
Yes.
Good.
Very much so. Doing well. But I have a paper I wrote in the eighth grade about alcohol addiction. And I found this really old book in our public school library on the genetics of alcoholism. And I got a really bad grade on that paper because the teacher didn't like what I was saying.
Really?
But it was, you know, I was hell-bent to figure that out. And, you know.
It sounds like your teacher was an alcoholic. She was like, I don't like being picked apart like this.
The town I grew up in, it was, they didn't sell alcohol. It was a dry county.
Well, that just means you have to drive drunk to another county to get your booze.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's not a great idea.
Which caused me a lot of problems when I was younger.
Uh-huh. But... Oh, did they send you for the booze?
No.
Oh, you had to go get them when they were in a ditch?
No, I mean, it just led to some issues with, jail and I don't know.
I see. Well, I see why you gravitated towards a smart man. You were like, I'm getting the hell out of this. Smart people can't be alcoholics. That's not my point. But Yeah. Well, interesting. I love this. This is great. Okay, so all right. So I think I have your ideas about highs and lows and what you're thinking. I hope we went enough into the idea that, I don't think we did actually, that if you could find a way to disconnect yourself from the number, because none of this stuff is like, there's no God level absolute about your blood sugar.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you have to let that go. It just,
yeah, you know, the people on the Facebook group that post, like, they're like, this is my Dexcom number and these are my 5 meters that I have. And, you know, and they're all different numbers.
Which one of these is right? I'm like, you don't have never going to know.
Matter.
Yeah. And it's a weird thing because I was lucky enough. I didn't see it as lucky at the time, but I was lucky enough to have that experience in the hospital during Arden's diagnosis when they tested her blood sugar with the crappy bubblegum meter they gave us to take home and with the $10,000 thing that the hospital uses. And the numbers were wildly different. And I said to the nurse, I don't understand, which one are we going to dose off of? And she goes, well, the one you're taking home. And I'm like, what?
That's like, not good.
I'm like, give me that one. She goes, this one costs like 10 grand. And I was like, I don't care. Like, I'll take that one.
Right.
And she goes, yeah, no, it's okay. And I'm like, it's okay. By the way, she didn't know what she was talking about, but the experience made me realize this is what we have. Like, this is the thing I have. Screw the number. I got to figure out where the number correlates to how she feels.
Yeah. And you're so smart for figuring that out so early on.
It's a leap, though.
You know, I think that was pretty impressive.
Yeah. Well, guess what, Beth? I knew that and I couldn't do anything else with it because without a CGM, you're just constantly testing and plotting in your head and trying to be like, all right, she was this here and this here. And like, you know, but it was more.
I cannot imagine. I remember when we were in the hospital and I'm like, yeah, we need this thing, this Dexcom thing.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we'll send off a prescription, but you might have to wait on your insurance. And I mean, we are lucky that we don't have to worry about that because we could just pay out of pocket. And I'm like, I need you to send this in. Like, I can't sleep without having this data. Mm-hmm. So we had a Dexcom like the instant that we got home. And I am so grateful for that. I do not know how people do it without the constant monitor. Right. It'd be very hard.
The modern conversation is, I don't understand how am I supposed to wear an algorithm if the Dexcom might be wrong. And I actually saw it happen to somebody recently, like their blood sugar was reporting higher than it was and their algorithm delivered insulin. And then they thought, I don't feel right, and tested their blood sugar and they were much lower than the CGM said. And that brings in a host of people going, see, you can't do this. And I'm like, you're thinking about this backwards, in my opinion. Like that's a one-off. Like that's
a one-time thing.
Yeah.
And if you didn't have it and you didn't have the algorithm, your blood sugar would be up and down and all over the place. And your brain definitely would not be doing good. Right. So yeah. I agree. I sometimes there is going to be a disconnect where I my son's been wearing, T-Slim with Dexcom for, I don't know, almost 3 years now. And we had that happen one time that I can think of.
Yeah.
So
I've seen it once or twice. I actually think yesterday was part of it. Like, she was coming down from being high. It was probably reporting higher than she was and still bolusing, and she got low from it. But guess what? She also wasn't 300 for 5 or 7 hours, exactly. Which happens to a lot of other people. Like, so I'd rather stop a lower falling blood sugar than fight with a high one. I'd make that into a T-shirt, but I don't think anybody would buy it. And
it's so harmful to like, I think a lot of parents have fallen into this trap of just letting their children hang around in the 200s, even the high 100s at school.
Yeah.
And thinking that's okay. And that those children's brains are not functioning.
Yeah.
You know, like they would otherwise. It's just not okay.
It's a tough decision to make, especially if you don't have the equipment, don't have the stuff and or the understanding or the time. Yeah. You just said a very white lady thing. I said a white guy thing this morning and texted Isabel. I just said a very white guy thing. Here, I'll pull up the text so I can show you. So Isabel texted me this morning. She says, good morning. She goes, oh, I hope it was fun recording with Arden last night. And I was like, it was until it wasn't. And then I, out of nowhere, said, hey, did John Lennon coin the phrase, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans? Or did he just use it in a song? And she goes, I'm not sure. I said, I'll figure that out today. And then she goes, please let me know. And I'm like, okay. And then she said, hey, I just want to let you know when you do this, like it's background stuff you guys don't know about. Like, once you do this, tell me, I'll put up a post about that. I said, I will. I told her when I record today, and I said I record at 11 and at 3:30 today, and Arden's packing for school, so I have a lot going on. And then I thought about it, and I said, oh my God, I'm so white. Packing and podcasting. Such a full day I have. Like, what a Caucasian thing to say. I don't know how I'm going to get through today. I have to record two podcasts and put my daughter's stuff in a bag.
Oh, I know. You know, I just listened to a newly released podcast by you this morning, and the guy was talking about how he couldn't afford insulin and he was having to buy the Walmart insulin. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine. I know that there's a lot of that out there. And I know, you know, in other countries, people don't have the ability to get a pump right away to get a pump at all, or, you know, so it's.
No, we're in the infancy of spreading this stuff throughout the world. And it's very. You know, again, it's in its infancy. Everybody doesn't have the stuff they need or they deserve. And I found myself like laughing at myself. I'm like, did I just complain about having to record two podcasts and help Arden pack today? I was like, what a ridiculous thing to say out loud. And she goes, hey, by the way, packing and podcasting is a good episode title. And I was like, oh, yeah,
That's true.
I'll write that down. But if somebody doesn't have these experiences with this technology, and those people don't go back and prove to their doctors how valuable it is, and those companies then don't make money, and then they can go to insurance companies and make claims and try to push things through insurance. And by the way, what many people don't understand is that the way to get if you're a manufacturer of a device, the way to get an insurance company to cover it widely is to first get the government to agree, to get Medicaid and Medicare to agree.
Yeah.
And so it is going to slowly help everybody. It just doesn't happen as quickly as, you know, you would like, because people's health is declining as they don't have these things, obviously. But you have these conversations and you spread it around and slowly you matriculate towards better. And, you know, maybe it's horrible to say, but maybe a generation from now, it won't matter how much money you have, or if you have insurance, you'll get diabetes and somebody will say, here, you put this CGM.
Yeah, here's
on
your pump with the algorithm. Here's your glucose monitor.
100%. Like, I mean, that you're not going to educate everybody. Like, some people aren't going to be available to it, and some people aren't going to even know to look, and some people might not care, and there might be psychological issues that stop people from doing these things. So why not try to get to a place where you can automate it in a way that will just help their lives? And, you know, and forget that they, like, who cares? Like, when Arden and I are talking last night, I said to her at one point, you know that without this algorithm, your life would be more intensive. And she goes, yes, Dad, I know. I used to manage diabetes before algorithms. And I was like, I know. I'm like, you know, like, do you really feel it though? And I realized she knows, but she's not impacted by it like I am, because she doesn't have like a 17-year memory of all this. She just knows there used to be more to do. And now there's less to do. And if you know, that's all she knows. Like, and you know what? That's good. Like, some people would say, oh, like she needs to learn the history of this. So you could, like, who the cares? like she's trying to live her life, not feel bad about the diabetes got easier for her. You know what I mean?
I mean, if I could put a system on my son that did like everything for him. What I was telling my husband the other night is, I'm like, why is the system not smart enough to look at the arrows and tell him like how many carbs he needs to take in to stabilize his blood sugar? You know, like, I don't understand why that instead it's just like, warning.
Yeah, that, by the way,
soon. It's like, this is so stupid. It seems like such an easy thing to put. I don't know. I'm not a computer coder, but I do follow a lot of the DIY systems.
Do you think about it?
Yeah, I feel like these things can be done. I think in the next decade, these algorithms are going to be absolutely insane, especially if AI comes on board. I don't see diabetes management being the hard slog it is.
Yeah,
now,
you're going to teach that machine to pivot on a pinhead, and then that's going to. Well, listen. By the way, I think the algorithm to say this is how many carbs I think you should eat right now probably exists already, and I'm going to guess that like somewhere between the FDA and liability, you're not going to see it as fast as you want to. But yeah. I mean, that, again, I know very little about programming, but that seems like a no-brainer to me.
It's so simple. Yeah, like if my brain can figure it out, then and I feel like a computer should be able to do it. Yeah, I don't know.
And when can it start to learn and remember and like...
Exactly. Like, oh, you took in, you know, you ate 2 gummy bears last time and it wasn't enough. This time have 3.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's I interviewed somebody recently who was talking about algorithms that are like, even with like geolocations, are going to be able to say, look, I know you said this is pizza, but the last time you were at this geographic location and ate pizza, it took 20% more insulin than when we were at that geographic location and ate pizza. So when you're at Verducci's, we're going to go 20% heavier. And when you're at this one, you know, we're going to go 20% lighter or whatever. Right. Like that's not crazy.
Yeah.
That is not crazy. So, you know, and listen, does that mean that there'll be a whole generation of people who don't have my granular level of understanding about managing this? Yes. And if you think that's a bad thing, I can make an argument for it being a good thing too. So,
I think it's better to just put people on these systems and, you know, not, I don't understand the need to make everybody go, you know, MDI for 6 months or whatever it is. I think that's ridiculous unless they want to. I feel like it should be a choice.
Yeah, of course. But that's exactly right. There are going to be people who want to understand it like this. But here's the thing that you don't know about me. I don't want to understand this like this.
That's hilarious.
I just had to.
I get it.
If you think that like Arden and I were talking last night, she's had diabetes for 17 years. If you think 17 years ago, I was like, you know what I'd like to put a lot of my focus on? I want to figure out how French fry fat slows down digestion so that I need another bolus 90 minutes after Arden eats. That's what I really want to understand. That's not what I want to understand. I wanted to write movie scripts, by the way, when I was younger. That's not happening at all.
Maybe you should start doing it now.
Sure, Beth. What I'll do is I'll stop making this podcast to write a movie. That'll go well. And which a thing, by the way, that I don't know if I'd be any good at. It was just something I wanted to do when I was younger. I tried it once. It's a different story. I'll tell you at the end. But my point is that like even last night, Arden said, you love talking about diabetes. And I said, no, I don't. And she goes, yes, you do. I'll bring mom up here. She'll say the same thing. And I'm like, oh, God, you guys misunderstand. I don't love this.
Like, it's that you have to, right?
Yeah. You think I love this? I'm like, Arden, you don't think I could make a podcast about something more fun and it would be more fun for me? And she goes, I don't know. I'm like, oh, I definitely could. I mean, right now.
I have to agree with you there because I actually am a person that listens to podcasts. So I like, you know, listening to a lot of science podcasts and some other ones in there. And you are very good. I listen to even now, and I feel pretty good with diabetes management. I listen to all of your podcasts just because it's enjoyable to listen to. Not so much that I'm, looking for management tips or anything. And plus, I think people with type 1 or parents of type 1s, they just end up having really interesting lives for some reason. I don't know.
Beth, you just made my day. And I want to tell everybody, I don't know how mature it is to tell everybody how mature I am, but I want to tell everybody how mature I am now because you started talking and I thought she's going to say it's a good podcast, diabetes or not, and that you're good at making a podcast. And I almost jumped in and said, oh my God, are you going to say I'm good at making a podcast? But I stopped myself. I just stood here. I clenched my fists. And I was like, don't say anything. Let her talk. Let her talk. And so...
you really are. I have other, like my children have other issues. Like one of them is autistic. And so I've listened to other podcasts just merely to get information and really bad podcasts,
it makes you want to kill yourself.
The sound quality is not good or they're just so boring, but I'm listening to it to try to glean some piece of information.
I saw a clip on the TikTok this morning. Some lady telling a story about how she, this woman looked like she was in her, what do I want to say? She looked like she was in her mid-50s, but her plastic surgery made her look 48. And she's telling a story about bedding an 18-year-old. And and how this kid took I don't know who this person is. You might all be like, oh my God, that's, I don't know. And like how the kid took a selfie while they were in bed and she didn't have her makeup on and she was so upset and she sent it to friends and I don't like my stuff being out there. And I'm like, I'm listening to a woman tell a story about having sex with a kid 40 years younger than her, it looks like, and she's somehow making it boring.
Right.
Like, as she's talking, I'm like, you're so bad at this. Like, if that was my story, we'd all be gathered around the campfire going, oh my God, and then what happened? But instead, she's telling it, and I'm like, oh, you're terrible at this. Like really bad at talking. Right. And so it's a, I would never call it a skill. I think it's just a thing I'm randomly good at. But
I do think it is a skill. Like, I feel like, because I've listened to your podcast from the beginning, like I started with the technology ones, and then and those were the only ones I listened to at first. And then I started listening from the start and all the way through. And I feel like you've gotten better.
I am getting better at it.
They were always good, but
yeah. Well, listen, I started off as a person who, if you put me in a room full of people, people would gravitate to me while I was talking.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
and
it used to be you talked more.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I'm learning to listen to people.
No, you're great at interviewing people. I think that you ask really good questions, and you're always good at like bringing the topic, you know, back on topic, but not, you know, not avoiding the, you know, side topics that are really interesting.
Oh, shit, Beth, we were talking about blood sugars in like neuroscience, and somehow I know your family has had problems with alcohol and the law. So that turns into, that's one of my superpowers. Beth, people like to tell me things.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
happens in my personal life too. So.
So you have a lot of secrets then.
People tell me a lot of stuff. And I'm just like I heard a woman the other night say online, she goes, I don't listen to those After Dark episodes because they don't have anything to do with me. And I'm like, you are making a major mistake if that's how you're thinking about that. Those things
are the best ones.
Oh, they're fascinating.
Yeah, those are great.
But she's like, well, I don't have a heroin addiction, so why would I listen? I'm like, oh, you got that all wrong. You are thinking about that backwards, yeah, as my mom would have said. And so, there's where, I don't know. I love talking to people. I'm unendingly interested in people and where they come from, but not in a judgmental way.
Yeah.
My wife and I just had this like weird conversation the other day where she's like, you're very judgmental. And I'm like, I'm not judgmental. I'm just accurately depicting what I'm hearing.
That is so funny. I had a conversation. I actually listen to your podcast sometimes when I'm cooking dinner, and my husband, that's the only time he hears it because he doesn't listen otherwise.
Well, he's the son of a bitch, but go ahead.
Right. But there was a girl on there, and she was saying something that was a little bit like, it was scientifically inaccurate. And I could tell that, like, you knew. but you weren't, you'd never tell anyone, you're wrong about that. And let me tell you how it is. And instead, you let people tell their story and their perspective. And oftentimes, it leads to something, at least for me, that I was not expecting about why that person feels that way, or, you know, the what brought them to that opinion. So I just find it very...
Thank you.
I don't know. I think you have good interviewing skills. I don't think I would be able to do that. I would stop them and be like, actually, let me educate you on this.
I think of that very much the way I told you earlier, I think of other things. So I used to think of it when I was younger as a tree with never-ending branches that created more never-ending branches. And I don't know a way to explain that. But I should probably not delve into this without being able to explain it to people. But I think of life as I started in a spot and I took a step forward, and then I was presented with two branches and I could have gone left or right. And I went left, and then there were two more branches, and then I went again, and that keeps happening. And so I think about existence and expansion like that. This is going to, I don't have big words, Beth, because I didn't go to college. But so my point is if I would go back to the start and make a right, I don't think I'd be a wildly different person, but I would be a different person. And wouldn't it be interesting to see where that person ended up? Or if you made a left on branch 9 million, like that kind of thing, instead of a right. And so when people are talking, I want to hear how they got there and why they think this. Not to tell them they're right or they're wrong, because the truth is that for them, they're right. They believe what they're saying. You don't get anywhere telling someone, hey, the thing you hold in your heart, that's not right. Because it's right to them, because they made 9 million decisions that they didn't realize after they took their first step. And so this is their reality. They live in a world where this is all true and right. And you can't tell them they're wrong. I mean, there are some knowables, right? someone picks up a piece of aluminum and says, this is cold rolled steel, you can go, no, it's not, it's aluminum. like that's a thing. But when you're talking about people's feelings and their experiences, it's the only way you're going to quote unquote fix the world is if we all understand how we get to where we are. Mm-hmm. And then somehow in my mind, that feeds back into you doing better with your diabetes.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. Yeah. That's one of the reasons I like listening to the podcast. So
I really appreciate it. It was very kind of you to say that. I swear to you, you made my whole week. Because just the fun part of me, I think I make a good podcast. And by that, I mean enjoyable to listen to, something you want to go back and find again.
Yeah,
that's how it occurs to me. And then I've said it before, I'll tell you, I think my job around diabetes is to trick you into paying attention to your diabetes and learning stuff about it that you would never learn otherwise, because it's really boring. And who would take the time?
Exactly.
Know, right. Yeah. So that's my job. I'm here to trick you into taking care of yourself by saying something funny about you making translucent Indian people. I don't know. That's how I get to the end. You guys can like it or not like it. Honestly, I couldn't possibly give a shit. So I'm doing this for me and my kid, who will never listen to this. I guarantee. She told me last night, Beth, she goes, if you somehow turn this podcast into a $20 million a year organization, I'm like, right? She goes, and you retired and said, here, take the podcast. You can be the host now. She'd go, I wouldn't do that. I was like, you motherfucker. Like, what do you mean? And I said, no. Yes, you wouldn't. She goes, I wouldn't. She's like, it's just not a thing I'm interested in.
Oh my God. That sounds so much like my son. Mm-hmm. He is like, last night at dinner, he's obsessed right now with climate change and global warming. And I don't know, he's in science club and he's absolutely obsessed with solving climate change. So that has led him to an obsession with nuclear fusion. And I was talking about Vertex opening the factory for the stem cells. I'm like, isn't this great? You know, I'm like, you know, maybe in, you know, a couple decades, there'll be a stem cell, you know, cure for diabetes. He's like, that doesn't matter. He goes, diabetes is so insignificant.
Thanks.
I'm like, you have diabetes.
I have to tell you, I want to say this out loud. The podcast is not worth $20 million a year. If it was, you'd know, because I would probably tell you. I would probably start, instead of like, hello, friends, and welcome to this, I would be like, hey, guys, welcome back to my $20 million a year podcast. I did it. Like, I'd probably every day say that, just so you all know what level of trashy I would probably be if I had $20 million every year. But I was like, wow, you really wouldn't. And you know what? In the end, I was proud. I was like, I raised a kid who is interested in what she cares about and interested in the things she's passionate about. Right. And this is
and
a
not,
thing.
Not so innate. Like, they don't have diabetes on their mind 24/7. I think that's always been my goal. It's like, if you could just not have to think about that all the time.
Yeah. I mean, there's part of me that I actually said to her later, because her blood sugar was a little low when she said that, apparently. So I said to her later, I'm like, I got to be honest with you. I think you would do the podcast because, you know,
oh yeah,
money. And she goes, no. And I'm like, yeah, that's 19-year-old you saying that. Yeah. I was like, wait till 30-year-old you.
30-year-old. That's what I was going to say.
Wait till like, she's 30. How much is a car? I was like, wait till you realize that little thing. Wait till you realize that like car payments are like a thing, and then there's insurance, and then you have to gas them, and then they need oil and tires, and that's just your car. When you realize that the house doesn't stay cool by itself or warm by itself, or that the food, and like when you get all that in your head, I'm like, you. And by the way, here's the other crazy thing, Beth. I think if Arden took this podcast over, it would continue to help people in a completely different way. Mm-hmm. And I think it would keep the management conversations alive so that people could go find them. And yeah, but
it would definitely be a different perspective, oh my God. Right?
You have no idea. She'd get on here and be like, what is wrong with you people? And then she would just, and she'd just like, I saw you do this online. That's ridiculous. Don't do that. she told me last night, she goes, you're not the same in real life as you are on the podcast. And I was like, well, no, I wouldn't imagine I am. And, uh-huh. And I was like, how? And she's like, I don't know. Like, you're more like, you're like, I'm like, do you think I'm nicer to the people on the podcast? Because you're definitely nicer to the people on the podcast. And I was like, oh, I probably am more direct in my real life.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe we'll do that at the end, Beth, where I where I just get really direct and blow everybody up for the last couple of years. That's how we'll go out. But I don't, in the end, I don't feel that way. Like, I don't think that's how people learn. Mm-hmm. In your personal life, I mean, you know, I talk, obviously I drag Erica on here to talk about it all the time because I'm trying to figure it out. Like, we don't, people don't communicate well, and I'm no different. So I'm just better at communicating on this. Anyway, I'm not going to tell you about the time I tried to write a script and all I ended up doing was getting 20 pages into something that completely resembled A Bridge to Terabithia, which is a book. Which is a
That's
book.
Like the saddest.
Which is a book I had never read. And the,
oh, really?
Here's the 2 minute drill. My early 20s, Kelly and I are just married. I make this proclamation one day when I wake up and we're all getting ready to go to work. And I said, I have a great idea for a movie script. I'm calling out sick and writing it. And she's like, go ahead. And because we were young, like now she'd be like, you better get the fuck out there and make some money. Leave in your stupid ideas. And so I stayed home. I put like a 20-page treatment together, started writing the beginning of it, came home. She reads it. She goes, this is very good. And I said, thank you. She goes, have you ever read A Bridge to Terabithia? And I said, no. I don't read books. Proudly, I said that in the 20s. I had never read it. And I said, no, why? Thinking she was going to make like some, like, oh, you know, but she goes, well, you're writing it right now as a movie. And I was like, are you kidding me? And that was so defeating to me, Beth. I stopped trying to do it.
It was a great movie, though.
This was long before the movie came out.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. This was back when it was just a book. So I had written this treatment about these kids who live in this old creaky house, and there's this property behind them with a fence, and beyond the fence is this forest and woods, and in the woods were magical creatures. And I literally had that going for 20 pages. I had never heard of that book in my life because I am an illiterate, basically. So anyway, that depressed me so much, I stopped writing things.
Well, maybe you'll go back to it someday.
Nah, I don't know, Beth. This podcast is pretty popular. I think we should keep doing this for a while. All right. I appreciate you doing this very much. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. No problem.
Hold on for me for 1 second, okay?
Okay.
A huge thank you to one of today's sponsors, Gvoke Glucagon. Find out more about Gvoke HypoPen at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. You spell that GVOKEGLUCAGON.com/juicebox. A huge thanks to US Med for sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box podcast. Don't forget, usmed.com/juicebox. This is where we get our diabetes supplies from. You can as well. Use the link or call 888-721-1514. Use the link or call the number, get your free benefits check so that you can start getting your diabetes supplies the way we do from US Med. I'd like to thank AG1 for sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box podcast and remind you that with your first order, you're going to get a free welcome kit, 5 free travel packs, and a year's supply of vitamin D. That's at ag1.com/juicebox. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back soon with another episode of the Juice Box podcast. If you or a loved one was just diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and you're looking for some fresh perspective, the Bold Beginnings series from the Juice Box podcast is a terrific place to start. That series is with myself and Jenny Smith. Jenny is a CDCES, a registered dietitian, and a type 1 for over 35 years. And in the Bold Beginnings series, Jenny and I are going to answer the questions that most people have after a type 1 diabetes diagnosis. The series begins at episode 698 in your podcast player, where you can go to juiceboxpodcast.com and click on Bold Beginnings in the menu. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording, wrongwayrecording.com.